Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the educational voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Indeed. Educational indeed, Matthew.
So you told me a story yesterday, mate, because you've been continuing to do these Instagram live chats. Plenty of goalkeepers signing up, joining up, and kids and viewers kind of listening in to some many pearls of wisdom that you and that goalkeeper in particular are telling the world during lockdown. But Paul Clements, who we've spoken to on the Goalkeepers Union podcast before, the Huddersfield Town goalkeeper coach, gave you a few little nuggets of info that he's been passing on to his own goalkeepers.
He did indeed. Yeah, first and foremost, it was another great interview. So I would advise anybody to watch that. We did a bit on how to improve a goalkeeper, but not just focusing on the technical. He spoke a lot about the psychological, about the physical. So giving examples, for instance, if you were diving down into the bottom corner, a lot of goalkeeper coaches might think it's just purely a technical issue and they might do the drill hundreds of times and not necessarily see an improvement. But he gave some really good examples of goalkeepers that he worked with. In particular, some of the goalkeepers he's worked with at Huddersfield Town and how he's made these little differences and how he's done it by not just focusing on the technical. So first and foremost, I'd definitely advise people to tune into that. It's well worth a watch or a listen. But yeah, he had said to me, we spoke privately afterwards, and he said that part of what he does with his young goalkeepers at Huddersfield is effectively give them homework, which firstly, I absolutely love, because I think that it's very easy as a goalkeeper coach to get very focused on the technical aspect of training, or as a goalkeeper to get focused on the technical aspect of training. But if you were to consider that goalkeeping, like any subject in school, you are going to be graded on it, because there's so many different levels of goalkeeper, things you can learn in goalkeeping. And so what he then does, he'll say to a goalkeeper coaches, his young goalkeepers, go away and study this, for instance. But what he actually done recently is he said six or seven of our podcasts, he said to his young goalkeepers, go and study the podcast. So for instance, the Tom Heaton interview we did, and he's asked them to then come back to him and give them the main things they've learned from the podcast, which I think firstly one buzzing, because obviously it's great for us and it shows that what we're doing is making a bit of a difference, which is nice. But also I just think it's a brilliant way of coaching, because I think that, again, we go back into it, the technical aspect of goalkeeper is such a small part of becoming a goalkeeper. The intelligence you need and the understanding, the education you need is so much bigger than that. So to actually set your young goalkeepers a task of going and learning from some of the best, and of course we have interviewed some of the best, haven't we, Matthew? It's a really nice way of going.
Do you know what? I love that, but I would have loved it even more if one of the keepers had come back and reeled off a stat about one of the goalkeepers that we featured. So nothing from all the psychological aspects and the training methods that you've discussed, but instead a stat, something that I've reeled off. Nothing to do with what you've said, just a stat that I've given them. Yeah. Did you know, Clem, that Alec Chamberlain was an ever-present for four seasons at Colchester United, his first four seasons as a pro goalkeeper? No, I didn't. And that's great, but not exactly the point, though.
But I do really think, just to labour on that point a bit, I think it's something that, and I've used this example a few times, like if goalkeeping were a subject in school, and I just think it's a nice thing for maybe coaches listening in. Like, consider that, because it is, it's again, and I've been guilty of this, you turn up, go to training, you practice your Ws, you practice your cuts, your low dives, mid dives, etc. But actually learn goalkeeping, watch some of the best, the little intricate details. So I think the way that Clem coaches, and he's a good example because he has gone from effectively like youth teams at Middlesbrough, and he's kind of really worked his way up to where he is now without necessarily playing at a really high level himself. So he's seen it from, you know, the under eights all the way up to now working with some of the world's best. And I just think the way in which he's going about it is an excellent way of coaching.
Goalkeeper studies, mate. There you go. There's another idea for future generations at university. But you mentioned there about practicing your W, your K, and various other goalkeeping techniques. We've had a fair few tweets in this week regarding a specific goalkeeping technique, which appears to have taken the world of social media by storm in recent days. Now, this isn't anything new. It just so happens at times like this, doesn't it, where someone plucks a video from somewhere and it just hits at the right time. And all of a sudden, everyone is talking about it. Vinnie Jones in goal for Wimbledon at Newcastle way back when, for example. But on this occasion, it is the Danish catch. Now, this is a video of Kasper Schmeichel. It's gone around in beautiful slow motion, performing the Danish catch in all its splendor. Like I said, nothing groundbreaking nor new, but a technique suddenly right back in the limelight again.
It is indeed the Danish catch. It sounds delicious, doesn't it? Maybe I'm just thinking of the Danish bun, I don't know. But no, do you know what? It's not new. This is it. It's not new. It's Thomas Sorensen. I remember Thomas Sorensen doing it all the time, a long time ago. But do you know what I'd say? And I think because the footage is so good, the footage that we've all seen of Kasper Schmeichel doing it, it looks great because it comes in, it's so secure in the way in which he holds it. For what it's worth, I love this technique. I think that we're looking at the marginal gains that you can get as a goalkeeper. And we spoke before about different techniques that different goalkeepers adopt. You know, I remember watching Oliver Kahn and the role that he used to do, which you don't really see anymore. But, you know, certain techniques, that one, a lot of goalkeeper coaches and goalkeepers will know this one. If you make a clap save down to your right, you're taught then to kind of spring back up, almost forwards, if that makes sense. Whereas you get a lot of people doing this sort of swivel on their bum and then going the other way. That's another technique that I'm seeing used a little bit more often. But look, the Danish catch for me, I quite like it for the fact that if you're trying to make a W catch that high up, where it is around chest, chin, that kind of region, there is some risk to it because it's a difficult technique. It's one that I struggle with, in fairness. It's probably one of the simpler techniques. But if the ball's moving on you a little bit to then produce a W technique, we've seen it where it slipped through hands. We've seen it where it's rebounded out. Whereas Danish catch, in fairness, you know, just by doing a little jump and by adopting that technique, you're effectively doing the cup save, but a little bit higher up. You're doing it chest to chin, which ordinarily would be a W technique according to most goalkeeping handbooks. So I could see this becoming a regular technique with a lot of other goalkeepers, not just Danish goalkeepers. It wouldn't surprise me if in 10 years' time, this is just a standard technique and keepers are almost getting criticised if they're doing a W as opposed to a Danish catch when it is a ball that's straight at you, top end, chest to chin, because it does look that little bit safer.
Well, like I said, we did have a lot of tweets in about this one and a few people were saying, no way would I ever teach my young goalkeepers to do this. Looks great, can appreciate it, but I wouldn't teach this to young goalkeepers.
Yeah, look, and by the way, this is it where it's all opinions. There's no right or wrong. And that's what I quite like about this is that, you know, unless they're going to do a study as to how many times you drop a ball, 100 times doing the Danish catch, 100 times doing the W, ultimately it's down to what the goalkeeper feels more comfortable doing. I was always W. I've never, ever performed the Danish catch. I don't even know how to do the Danish catch. So it wasn't ever a technique that I was exposed to. But similarly, I was never exposed to the side volley when I was younger, and I wish I was. So I think that it will be interesting. Look, the proof will be in the pudding. We'll know in 5-10 years' time whether this is something that a lot more goalkeepers adopt. I can see the theory behind it. That's all I'll say is that I think when the ball is fired at that sort of height, there is a risk to doing the W, especially the way the ball moves now. So that type of a catch, like a cup technique, the more that you can do that type of a technique, in theory, it will be that little bit safer. But again, look, there's certain goalkeepers that have mastered it. Kasper Schmeichel's absolutely mastered it. You know, me coaching him, I'd never ever say to him, drop that and go back to a W because he's so secure. I don't remember him ever dropping a ball doing that technique, which in itself is an argument to say that the technique works.
Okay, well, if you have a goalkeeping technique that you want us to look at, to discuss, to analyse, let us know. Very easy to get in touch. hello@goalkeepersunion.net, on Twitter @GKUnion. Moving on to this podcast's particular topic, we've done Schmeichel, we've done Benetti. Now for safe hands himself, David Seaman. The idea being here that we have plucked five of his top saves throughout his 22-23 year career. Now, before I'm lambasted, by the way, for not picking the greatest ever saves of Seaman's career, just as I was reminded of the fact it should be pronounced Orvi Zela and not Uwe Seeler, as I did in the previous podcast on Peter Benetti. Thank you to the one gent who emailed in on that. I shall keep you nameless for now. This is just a random selection of saves by David Seaman, encompassing QPR, Arsenal and Manchester City, and England thrown in there as well. We'll also, after the five, very quickly touch on three other incidents often associated with Seaman, incidents we've tended to push back on over the course of doing this podcast. But again, as always, in the fair interest of balance.
One in particular that may well be a little bit controversial. I'll drop that in now.
Ooh, gritty. Naturally, there is one hugely popular save that we simply could not ignore, but others, some may recall, some may not. We'll put a compilation on Twitter so you can check them out there at GK Union. But Rich, you're going to take a look at each one and provide a spot of expert analysis, as you so often do. First up is this one, save number one.
Barnes, McMahon in the middle. He's unmarked. And Rush, oh, terrific goalkeeping. A high-class save. McMahon may well have been heading for goal himself, but Rush was looking to make sure, and Seaman had to react a second time and change direction, get an arm up. Great save.
That is the 11th of November, 1989. Now, the main reason for this, and indulge me, if you will, is that it's pretty much the first David Seaman save I personally can recall seeing. QPR v Liverpool at Loftus Road. Liverpool en route to the title that season, but they were undone in this one, thanks largely to the heroics of Seaman. For this save, the cross came in from John Barnes. Steve McMahon headed it goalwards, only for Ian Rush inside the six-yard box to redirect the trajectory and force a point-blank stop from Seaman.
This, and I know we're going to talk about a lot of other saves, and obviously a very famous one, the pesky Salido save in particular, but this is my favourite save. It's actually, for several reasons, I'll explain why this is my favourite save. This was on Saves Galore, if I remember rightly. I think this is where I remember this save initially, Saves Galore. But yeah, this, so as you mentioned it, if you haven't seen it, definitely get on and have a look at this one. The reason I love this save is the intelligence, the footwork, the power and the speed. So first and foremost, the intelligence in terms of his positioning, the header coming back across goal, you can see that he doesn't fully commit because he can tell that Ian Rush is there. So as he starts to move left, he just pauses ever so slightly, sets, and he's then ready for the Ian Rush header. He's so close into him. He's a matter of, 3 yards, if that. And the reactions he shows in order to get his hands up and tip the ball over the bar in the way that he does, it's just a fantastic save, such power, speed. Yeah, so for me, I know we're going to talk about other saves. Do you know, interestingly, and there's ever so slightly a similarity between the one he conceded against Ryan Giggs, where David Seaman did set a little bit lower at times, and certainly the one he conceded against Ryan Giggs, that famous one in the FA Cup. If anything, his reactions here are probably ever so slightly quicker than they were to the Ryan Giggs one. You know, the fact that Ian Rush is only 3 yards out, the power in the header, but to get the hands up in the way that he did and get it up over the bar, it's just an absolutely phenomenal save.
Yep, yes, very, very good save, that one. His final season at QPR before moving on to Arsenal, which is where we move on to save two.
Found Saunders this time, hung up for Atkinson. Oh, amazing save! Atkinson again, Seaman again! Well, David Seaman has climbed all the way back to peak form. Just ask Dalian Atkinson, not much wrong with the header, back from where Seaman was coming. Deserved his luck off the post and then blocked out the light when Atkinson came back.
That was the 12th of April 1993, the inaugural Premier League season. This was actually a big game for visitors, Aston Villa, at the time. They were in a title scrap with Manchester United, needed to win and did win eventually at Highbury, but did come up against the David Seaman, who made one heck of a double stop from the now late Dalian Atkinson. Another cross in from the right. Atkinson meets it with a downward header. Seaman coming back on himself just to make the first save and then picks himself up to deny Atkinson from the rebound. That's after it's come back off the post.
He did, yeah. And it was for me, the first one in particular. The second one was, he showed bravery, came out, made a great block. But the first one in particular, header back across him. It's just the fact that he managed to get set. We see so often, cross it to the far post, keeper's still moving and they get done with a header back across them. And it's a really good lesson for a young goalkeeper to sometimes you just have to set wherever you are. And I think this is a good example here where he's managed to get set in time and that's allowed him to get back on himself. And the way in which he's had to shape his body, and that's another thing where, look, goalkeeping isn't always textbook. Sometimes you've got to manipulate your body in such a way in order to make a save. And it might not necessarily feel comfortable. It might be a brand new movement to you, not necessarily something you're doing in training. And that was the impression I got with this particular save, because it's a very odd and awkward shape he's had to put his body into in order to get enough power in the fingers to tip it onto the post. And then the speed at which he gets up, gets himself across and makes the second block. It's up there with that first save, I have to say. I do still prefer the save at QPR ever so slightly, but once again, superb save.
Funny how football works with this one. Useless bit of trivia, because, you know, that's what we tend to do on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, or at least what I tend to do anyway, is that this was almost exactly 10 years to the day, but one prior to that famous stop from pesky Salido, which we'll get on to. It's also funny how, despite the level of the stop, the magnitude of that game not really being particularly big for Arsenal meant it was never really highlighted at the time.
This is where, and I think I found interesting, all the keepers we spoke to in recent weeks, on the podcast as well, and recent weeks on the Instagram lives that we're doing, you always ask them, what's your favourite save? And it's funny, they always give two answers. They'll always say, well, actually, my favourite save was such as, I did an interview with Scott Lowe, for instance. He's like, well, to be honest, my favourite save was a save I made for Barnet this season, where this happened, that happened, that happened, and it was great. However, the one that everyone remembers is a save I made against Aaron Lennon in the Cup against Tottenham, you know, because it's that much bigger. It's the same for me. Like, I think back to some of my best saves. My one that's probably remembered by Watford fans was a save from Patrick Berger up in the top left-hand corner, because it was Patrick Berger. It took us to the semi-final of the Cup. and so on and so forth. But was it my best ever save? Probably wasn't in my best 10. You know, I made a couple in training that I thought were unbelievable saves, but no one cares. And that's where I think it's very much down to the state of the game and what it means in that particular game. You know, it's one of the reasons the Gordon Banks save, look, that was just an unbelievable save. But when it's done in a World Cup match against Brazil, against Pele, wasn't it? You know, and because of the fact that it was such a big moment, a big player and everything, it ticks all the boxes. Of course, that's going to be the one that we remember so much more. So when it comes to Seaman, we're going to talk about the pesky Salido save, of course, because of the meaning and the size of the game, that's always going to get more attention. And when it is a world-class save like that one was, then of course people are going to go overboard.
We'll get your top five in soon, mate. Don't worry about that, especially if this lockdown continues. We'll need the content. So, you know, think about your top five and maybe we'll do a Richard Lee special.
I'm just trying to slide it in. I'm just, every time we talk, I somehow bring it back to one of the saves I made. It's just what I'm going to do.
Okay, we're going to fast forward now 6 years to the Battle of Britain on the 17th of November, 1999.
Not many would have thought Scotland would really still be in it at this stage tonight, but they certainly are. They've got a corner. Oh, and David Seaman stops them going level on aggregate.
Oh, I don't believe it. What an instinctive save from the England goalkeeper. He knows nothing about this. Anywhere else, that's a goal. Anywhere. He just throws his arms up, and much like Gary McAllister's penalty miss when he just threw himself across, the elbow went up and away it went. Well, it's a little bit like deja vu.
England v Scotland for a place at Euro 2000. Goals from Paul Scholes up at Hampden Park had given England the advantage coming into this second leg, but Don Hutchinson reduced that deficit at Wembley, and with roughly 10 minutes to go, I think it was, Christian Daly, the wily old centre-back, very nearly wiped it out. Not the most spectacular save, this one, but certainly important considering the occasion. And one of the reasons I went with this, and please do object if I'm way off the mark here, was because of what I took from watching Seaman play. He wasn't, for me, someone who always produced the spectacular, but that was because I don't think he needed to. Such was his positional sense, his reading of the game, the fact that he always knew, really, sensed that he was one step ahead of everyone else. He was often well-placed to make saves, which perhaps for another goalkeeper would have still been saved, but in more dramatic fashion, is that fair to say?
Do you know what? I'd have to agree with you there, Matthew. I was about to say, my analysis of this save sums up David Seaman in that his positioning is spot on, cool, calm, collected. Very rarely did Seaman make rash decisions. Yeah, it was one of my biggest compliments I could give him as a goalkeeper. You just felt so calm when he was playing. Very rarely. And look, there's a lot of goalkeepers you watch where you know they've got the sublime in them, but they've also got the ridiculous. And someone like David Seaman, for me, just so steady in everything he did. And this is a good example where the position is spot on. He's moved across the goal brilliantly. His depth in terms of where he is off the line, probably half a yard, perfect, giving himself plenty of reaction time. And it is a big save, a solid save. It's a save that not every goalkeeper makes for various reasons. One being positioning being a big reason. Obviously reactions, David Seaman always had very, very good reactions. The strength of his wrists, the strength of his hands is one where he's got a really big, firm parry away and got it out of the danger area. Look, he's ticked every possible box that he needs to with this particular save. And as you mentioned, it was a crucial save. And more often than not, although we're going to talk about a couple of moments that didn't necessarily go his way, more often than not, David Seaman made the saves when it mattered. He was consistent and secure when it mattered.
Yep, needless to say, it was all in vain as England bombed out of Euro 2000 in the group stages. To be fair, he didn't actually play in that final game with Romania as Nigel Martin took his place. I think he was injured in the warm-up or something like that. That's neither here nor there right now. As we move swiftly on to save number three, this one, of course, needs no introduction.
Plenty of aerial power in there for the Blades. But can they find a cutting edge? It's over. Pesky Solano off the line. Oh, and then Brown hitting it. Oh, well, Jackie Elka rather at the finish. Goodness me, how did that not go in? So nearly carved out an equaliser. Would have done so, but for the brilliance, and there is no other word for it, from David Seaman.
The 13th of April 2000, and through all of these, by the way, have come in either April or November. Random coincidence, but it is the FA Cup semi-final at Old Trafford between Arsenal and Sheffield United. Pesky Salido thinks he's levelled the score at one apiece. Seaman has other ideas.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And it's for so many different reasons. Again, the way in which he's moved across the goal, the realisation where there's a very slight similarity to the first save we mentioned from Ian Rush, where it's not the first ball, it's the second ball, to have the awareness that Pesky Salido is even there, to then react to the header, which is behind him. And I mentioned before about a save he made where he had to get his body into an awkward shape, an unfamiliar shape. It's the same again. You don't practice this save in training. And that's one of the main reasons that it makes it such a phenomenal save, because you don't do, or certainly not, I never did it, any of the goalkeepers I work with, where you're doing a save back on yourself in that such a way where you're having to arch your back and arc yourself in such a way to get back towards your line and scoop the ball away from danger in the way that he did. It was just phenomenal. And not only that, and a lot of people have touched on this, but I'll echo what a lot of people say. He got back there. Not only did he keep it out, he got enough power on it, the awareness to see and to understand that just saving it wouldn't have been enough. Just saving it and dropping down on the line would have meant that it was a tap-in for Pesky Salido. The way in which he somehow got that power in his wrist, in his arm, to scoop it just enough away to get it out of danger. And then, of course, I think it was Jagielka came in and fired it wide, which I was delighted about, by the way. Because could you imagine if Jagielka comes in and steams in and puts it in the roof of the net? We don't remember that save, but it's such a shame. And I'm going to touch on a save he made against Man United, and they then score about 30 seconds later. So it kind of kills it to an extent. But the fact that then Jagielka missed, no, look, it's up there. I know I said that the save, my favourite save was the first one he made. Of course, look, this is phenomenal. There's nothing more he could have done in the save. It's the perfect save. I don't know many goalkeepers who make that, even now, because I think that technically goalkeepers are slightly different. You know, if I were to bring up David De Gea, for instance, I don't know if David De Gea makes this save, truth be told. And I know a lot of people disagree with me on that, and they feel that because of David De Gea's power, flexibility, etc., etc., I don't know if David De Gea makes this save.
It's just seeing the players squirm as well, isn't it? The sheer look of disbelief on Pesky Salido's face. The fact he almost instinctively tried to pat it into the goal after the save, as if to suggest there'd been some sort of glitch in the matrix. The agony and the fact that it had almost pinballed around the box. The header was heading towards what was the near post from the corner. Carlos Saba redirects it with a mishit volley, and then Pesky Salido sends it back the other way again. And it wasn't even a full palm from Seaman, it was his fingertips. So the strength and the power that he's managed to generate in that, just an incredible save.
That's it. You touched on a few things there. There's a similarity. You mentioned the save before that he tipped onto the post, a double save. You do need, look, it's something that, is it something I'll say to young goalkeepers, work on your finger strength? Well, to an extent, I wouldn't say spend hours a day working on the strength of your fingers, but it might be. These are those marginal gains that we'll talk about a lot where, you know, I remember when I was younger, the old stress balls that you used to play with. But actually looking back now, without even thinking about it, that's good stuff you can do for your fingers, because you're working muscles that you aren't necessarily ordinarily working. So it's maybe just thinking outside the box. Now, I'm saying this without knowing whether David Seaman did that, but certainly to have that kind of power, he might have just been lucky and just had really powerful wrists, hands, fingers, all the handling he did over the years. Maybe he was just really fortunate. That's then built up the power in that. Or for all we know, it could have been like that little bit of extra work he did as a kid that suddenly comes out in a moment like that. And I think a beautiful lesson for young goalkeepers is that, and in fact, Paul Clement said this on the interview I gave, did with him on Instagram. And I thought it was a really nice way of putting it, in that he said, like, one healthy meal isn't going to make you healthy, in the same that one McDonald's isn't going to make you unhealthy. However, it is those consistent actions over a period of time where you're going to start to see the small benefits, and then every now and then you might make that fantastic save. And he made the point that it could be such small things that you do over a period of time. And he gave the example of Jonas Lersel and some of the work that they did, and these tiny, tiny things, which then leads up to him making a brilliant save towards the end of the Premier League season, I think we've all seen, and they end up staying up by the skin of their teeth. And it's those kind of moments where you don't know at what point and what bit of training is going to lead to that incredible save. But it might be such small details and things that you're not even necessarily thinking about at the time that might pay off 3 or 4 years down the line. And I just look at some of the stuff that David Seaman did, and those saves in particular, where I go back to it, I don't think there's a lot of modern day goalkeepers that make that save against Pesky Salido. I'd love to know. And if we ever get him on the podcast, which I'm sure we will at some point, he's on our hit list very much, isn't he? So if we do get him on, I'd love to know if there's anything he did in his younger years that gave him that increased strength in his hands, fingers, wrists. Because again, I've seen very few saves at anything like that since.
Very true, very true, Richard. What a save it was. His parting gift, really, at Arsenal, for that was his final season at the club before moving on to Manchester City for his final ever season, or half season to be exact, which is where we pick up save number 5.
Scholes, Van Nistelrooy, real chance! Up, back off the post! Would you believe it?
Magnificent save. That is a magnificent save by the goalkeeper. great 1-2 with Paul Scholes and Ruud van Nistelrooy, but you've got to say that's a magnificent save.
13th of December 2003, Manchester Derby at Old Trafford. It's possible this was his last ever great save as a goalkeeper. He only played six more times after this before retiring the following month. As you heard there in the commentary, Ruud van Nistelrooy in a classically instinctive one-on-one denied by a sprawling seaman.
Yeah, very good save. And for me, it was the fact that he read the situation. Look, you know, you're taught as a goalkeeper not to guess. Certainly if it's a one-on-one, you shouldn't guess. You should try and stand up as long as you can. Don't go to ground too early. But there are moments when, and this is a good example, where he's come in, hit the shot first time, and because David Seaman's read the situation, he can see the body shape of Ruud van Nistelrooy, he can see where he's looking to place it, and it's just the intelligence he's shown to read it. So he's gone early. If you were to freeze frame at the moment that Ruud van Nistelrooy shoots, you can see David Seaman's already committed himself. He's down to his left, and in the end, it's fingertips which push it onto the post. It's a fantastic save for me. This is the goalkeeping intelligence. This is the experience of him playing for 20-odd years at the very top of his game to understand and know what Ruud van Nistelrooy was going to do in that moment. And once again, he's shown good strength in the fingers, got enough on it to get it onto the post and get it away from danger. The unfortunate thing was, and I touched on it earlier, was that then the ball goes out wide, they whip it in and they score from the second phase of play. But, I mean, that is what it is. There's only obviously so much you can do as a goalkeeper.
Minor details, mate. Minor details.
Indeed.
Okay, that is the five analysed from a positive perspective. We're now going to turn our attention to a trio of incidents, not saves. Incidents often referenced when in a discussion about David Seaman. Now, incidents as well that we tend to rebuff when mentioned in the podcast. So we're now going to pay them the attention from the view of a goalkeeper rather than that of an anguished football fan, I suppose you could say. Over to Gascoigne, to Naeem and to Ronaldinho.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! That is schoolboy's own stuff.
Well, we're heading for a penalty shootout. Naeem, or are we? Can you believe what you've seen? Seaman went back and back.
Ronaldinho takes, and David Seaman's cut off his line, and Brazil take the lead. Ronaldinho has scored. David Seaman is caught cold.
So there they are, three big moments in the history of English football. Is it time, Richard, to finally dispel some myths around these goals slash goalkeeping errors? Over to you, Mr. Lee.
Yeah, I'm going to be maybe a little bit controversial in that I think out of those three, the one that I think he would have been most disappointed with was the Paul Gascoigne one. And I'm going to give my reasons. I'm going to talk about the other two first. I'm going to come back to the Paul Gascoigne one because I think the Naeem lob, I don't think there are many goalkeepers that save that. And I don't think, I know a lot of people won't agree with me and they see it as a massive goalkeeping error. That is a horrible, horrible ball to deal with. That nobody ever strikes a football like that. Who does that? From that position in the field, smashes it up in the air. You're dealing with floodlights, you're dealing with the conditions, and it drops just under the bar. You're having to backpedal. Again, a movement you'll never, ever do in training. You've never, ever faced before. You have to backpedal. The ball drops under the bar, and you have to try and somehow scoop it out. I think that goes in against most top-flight goalkeepers, even now. So I don't blame him too much for that one. And I think
against most top-flight goalkeepers, that goes in now. Really?
I believe so. Because I think it's a horrible, horrible ball to deal with. That when you're having to move your feet like that, backpedal towards your own goal, everything that's going in your mind, you've got so much time to think about it. I still think that beats a lot. The problem is we'll never know because no one has that shot. No one ever has a shot like that where they smash it up into the sky and it drops under the crossbar as perfectly as he managed to do it. So I think that beats a lot.
So can I raise a couple of quick points before you continue, right? One, was he too advanced in his 18-yard box? It was the dying moments, wasn't it, of that Cup Winners' Cup final with Real Zaragoza. And two, once back in the form of a position that he seemed to be to keep the effort out, did he leap too early? I've always looked at this and thought he jumped too early because by the time his hand made contact with the ball, he was on his way down and therefore wasn't able to generate the power in order to get a strong enough contact.
Yeah, and he ends up parrying almost upwards, but not enough momentum. And as you say, it ends up in the goal. Look, you can break it down and you can say, yeah, he jumped too early. What I'm saying is that, again, after that, he would never have faced that same shot ever again. I don't think I ever faced a shot anything like that. I don't think many goalkeepers ever will. And that's, thankfully, you know, that's the case. Because I think if he did, that will beat a lot of goalkeepers, purely for the fact, you mentioned jumping early, but the ball's coming down such a height, such pace, such power, and you're backpedaling. To actually time your jump while you're going back is a very, very difficult thing to do. So, look, out of the three, for me, that's the, and I love an error rating, that would be the lowest of the three for me. The Ronaldinho one, I'm going to move on because I want to then touch on the Gascoigne one. Again, the Ronaldinho one, I looked at this so many times, even at the time. I think his positioning is fine. I think his positioning is perfect. He's advanced. He's a positive goalkeeper when it comes to coming for crosses. And again, for all of the places it could have been put. And this is where, in some ways, you have to argue that David Seaman has to be down as one of the most unlucky goalkeepers in these massive games, two massive games, to have moments like this happen. Because again, I think it does beat quite a lot of goalkeepers, especially if you've got quite a positive position. Now, you can ask the question, should he have saved it? Yes, of course he should. Look, according to goalkeeping, you take a rule of thumb, you take your position based on the fact that you want to be as advanced as you possibly can without running the risk of conceding over your head. That's like a rule of thumb that I'd always go by. And ultimately, he has conceded over his head. So he'll hold his hands up and say, yeah, I should have done better. But again, the freak nature of the shot, and I'm still not having that he meant to shoot. I know people will disagree with me on that. I'm still not having it. But the way in which the trajectory was so flat, such pace, clip the bar on the way in, it's absolutely perfect. In the same way that Naeem's was as well. You know, I think both of them, I count him as being incredibly unlucky on both of them.
Yeah, Naeem's a speculative effort. No question he meant that, but an element of fortune certainly in it. Ronaldinho has always maintained he was going for goal, but not that exact area of the goal. Juninho, his Brazilian teammate, did say years after the event that it was 100% meant to be a cross. I guess we'll never know. The Gazza free kick in the 91 FA Cup semi-final, it's always been regarded, hasn't it, as a phenomenal strike. Schoolboy's own stuff, as we heard from the iconic Barry Davies commentary. You, however, slightly beg to differ.
I think he'd be disappointed with that because I've seen it so many times. And the annoying thing now, and this is where it's so much easier now to judge and pass judgment on a goalkeeper because we've got 1,000 camera angles. We can see it from behind. We can see it from in the goal. We can see it sideways on. We haven't got that many camera angles with this. So the way that I see it is that he's lined his wall up the other side of the goal. Paul Gascoigne's free kick, in my opinion, isn't a brilliant free kick. It's a free kick that actually has gone lower than the wall, if that makes sense. He hasn't had to get it up and down over the wall. He's drilled it into the top corner. However, I do feel that it's David Seaman's side. If you watch David Seaman, he has a slight movement to the centre of the goal, which then doesn't allow him to get back quite in time. That being said, he still gets a firm hand to it, but he can't get it up and over the bar, unfortunately.
Such a fairy tale goal, that one. In a sense, Seaman was never really highlighted because it's going to forever be remembered from the Gazza angle. A few narratives around it too. Gary Lineker jogging over to him moments before to suggest he just has a crack. Seaman himself saying afterwards that his studs actually got caught in the Wembley turf, hence his inability to parry it over. You know, Seaman got his hand, couldn't hold. That's what we heard. Was it that powerful an effort, do you think?
I don't think it was even that powerful. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. It's like, I quite like the fact that David Seaman hasn't been blamed for this one because the fact that he got blamed for the other two in the way that he did and heavily criticised for the other two, in a way, it's kind of maybe it's evening things outside that he didn't get blamed for this one. But I think now, if I'm right in what I'm saying, that it was his side, that he's lined the wall up the other side. Well, the wall wasn't great, by the way. He's got the charger. He's got the two in the wall. They didn't really do a lot, has to be said. He has taken a slight step to the centre. And look, if his studs did get caught in the way that you said, that then explains a lot because he didn't get that much power in his dive. That being said, he did get his hands to it. I think David Seaman, 9 times out of 10, saves that ball. In a way, it's kind of nice that he didn't because it then builds into the whole Gazza story. And this was more about Gazza than it was about David Seaman. And if you're an outfield player looking at this, it's brilliant. I just think now, I'll go back to where I said, like, David Seaman, the save against Pesky Sledo, I don't see many top-flight goalkeepers saving that. I think the opposite would be true for this one. I think that even David Seaman himself, I think he saves that 9 out of 10 times if he does it correctly and he holds his position that little bit longer, moves his feet well, doesn't get his studs caught. I think he probably doesn't hold it, but I think it's quite a simple parry out for a corner ordinarily.
Okay, so in summary, Naeem, not really at fault. Ronaldinho, not really at fault. Gazza, at fault.
Naeem, not really at fault. Ronaldinho, yes, at fault. However, I deem him incredibly unlucky because he didn't do a lot wrong. And then Gazza, yeah, I think he'd be very disappointed with that.
Final mention on what gets remembered and what doesn't. 2 years before that World Cup quarterfinal with Brazil in 2002, England had played Sweden in a Euro 2000 qualifier at Wembley. Now, Seaman was caught off guard in that game with a free kick from what must have been some 40 yards out. Freddie Ljungberg was the taker, but he made an incredible one-handed stop. Again, not really referenced nor remembered, as is that was the game Paul Scholes became the first England player to be sent off in a home international. So that was that. But a great stop. We'll put that on our Twitter as well, because I just want to highlight that as one of the great saves at Wembley almost.
Yeah, indeed. And this is where, again, it's so... I guess it's, and this is like, it's not just goalkeeping, it's anything, but you could face the same shot 2 days running. One day you concede it, one day you save it. There's so many different factors to this, and that's something we've always got to remember. As well as, you know, I mentioned the Naeem thing, things we might never know, for instance, like the floodlights playing their part. Was it windy? Was the ball moving? Like, there's so many different variables all the time. So it's not black and white that he 100% of the time makes that save. And look, on another one, on another day, it might well have been that if his mindset was ever so slightly different, maybe he does get back and tip that one over from Ronaldinho. And it might be that they score from the corner because such and such didn't mark their man, and all of a sudden they're the villain. You know, it's all part of the story, and that's something I think we need to bear in mind. But it's just, it is interesting. I've made this point a lot of times, that had England come back and beaten Brazil, I don't think we talk about the Ronaldinho free kick all that much. Had they won the Cup Winners final, we don't talk about it all that much. So I just think as well, this is the other part of being a goalkeeper, and I'll keep saying this, luck is always going to play a part. If you make your mistakes in games that you win 4 or 5-1, then people forget about it very quickly. If it just so happens that your mistakes come in the big games, in games that you lose 1-0 by the odd goal, then of course they're going to get highlighted that much more. And you might play the perfect game other than that, but you'll wake up the next day and you'll be getting a 3 out of 10 in the paper.
Just don't make mistakes in playoff semi-finals, whatever you do. That's the key, really, here, isn't it? That's the message.
Simple. There you go. So simple.
Okay, Richard, I should end the podcast really on a note well worth mentioning, and that is the fact that I have scored past David Seaman.
I didn't know that. You kept that quiet all this time.
I did, yeah. Haven't really mentioned it, and that is because it was purely for a promo article on Yahoo, I think it was, just before the 2010 World Cup, somewhere on the banks of the River Thames, in a tiny little goal, well after he'd retired and pretty much rocking up to earn a nice little paycheck, while numpty journos like me blasted penalties at him all the live long day and then asked him the same questions about penalty shootouts. So, you know, still all good fun.
There you go. You take that, mate. You take that.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. We'll see you next time.